for listening to the Rivers Podcast. For more information on this teaching, visit our website at theriver.info.
So about this time last year, Christy and I, and the two girls, and once in a while the boys, we decided to invest in the TV show Lost. Do you guys know Lost? Like, how many of you know what I'm talking about when I say Lost? It was done years ago. We're a little slow in catching up. But, you know, back in October of last year, we decided to watch all six seasons, and we finished this summer, and it was quite, it's probably the best, biggest thing we've ever done in our whole marriage, 23 years of being married. It was awesome. Lost was phenomenal. You know, and how many of you who know Lost think Hugo is the best character on the show? Yes, he is. How many of you don't think he is if you like the show? Because I'm just going to tell you you're all wrong. We loved watching Lost, but as I reflect upon our months of watching six seasons of Lost, it dawned on me I like watching other people be lost. It was kind of fun to watch them be lost, but the reality is I don't like being lost. You know, in fact, I was lost kind of recently. When our daughter turned 12, and our kids turn certain ages, we do certain things, kind of rite of passage stuff with them where we can kind of usher them into young adulthood. So Reese turned 12 this summer. So Reese and two of her buddies, two other 12-year-old girls and I, went on a camping trip up to the UP. And wonderfully for me, Reese said that her brother Zeke could join us. So Zeke and I are sitting up in the van, driving up in the UP, and the three 12-year-old girls in the back. And I let the girls make a playlist. So we're just rocking out to Moana. I mean, there's some really good songs. And I told Zeke, I said, hey, Zeke, I think I know a shortcut to Pictured Rocks. Yeah, thanks for the confidence, yeah. But I knew I didn't know a shortcut. I said, I think I'm about 85% sure how to get there. And if we go there, we'll save time. And so we take my shortcut, and I'm singing to I Am Moana. You know, just singing, having fun. And it wasn't too long when Zeke looked at me and goes, Dad, you're lost, aren't you? He knew. He could just tell because I stopped singing. The joy was gone. And unbeknownst to him, you know, we had the air conditioning going. It was nice and cool, but I felt hot all of a sudden. You know, and I got a little sweaty. And I went, there's something internal. Just, I hate being lost. Do you know what I'm talking about? Being lost isn't good. And it's even worse to be lost relationally. Do you know what I'm talking about? I'm sure some of you do. Some of you know what it is to have relational conundrums that just don't seem to be working out. And there's a sense of lostness there. You just don't know how to fix it. You don't know how to get back to goodness. You know, and some of you, I know, are listening to me right now, you know, in a relational brokenness, you know, because you had an idea of this relationship lasting forever, but something went wrong and now it's gone and you just kind of feel lost. It's not good to be lost. And I had some of you students, right, stand, you know, The thought of tomorrow and future, well, that's not just a concern for students. You know, many people just don't know what they're going to be doing. Many people don't know, you know, what they're supposed to be doing. Is that true? Does anybody just kind of feel lost about their future, right? It's just, anybody? Yeah, good, thank you. It's just not a good feeling to be lost. And then, of course, there's a lostness when it comes to things of the faith. You know, at once, you know, faith was strong. Life got awful, and faith has taken a hit, and you feel lost. I mean, it's okay to look at somebody else on a TV show, and it's fun to watch their being lost, but it ain't no fun when you're lost yourself. Well, Jesus has some things to say to lost people. And today, we're beginning a little three-week series looking at the lost, the least, the lonely. Today, we're looking at what does Jesus have to say to those who were lost? And quite frankly, we only need to look at one geographical location in Jesus' life to see what he has to say to the lost. We're going to look at Jesus on the cross, and he addresses three different types of lost people while on the cross. And it's quite interesting to think that while on the cross, Jesus could have said anything, done anything, could have made sure that we got certain theological points. But instead of doing anything else, he simply began to speak to lost people while he was on the cross. So if you've ever been lost, nod your head. If you are lost, shake your head. Either way, nodding or shaking, maybe you should pay attention to hear what Jesus says to those who are lost. We begin with Jesus on the cross in Luke chapter 23. Now, what happens before we get to the verse, Jesus is on the cross. He's hanging up there, and he's looking down at the religious leaders, the Jewish folks of the day who turned him over to be crucified. His people betrayed him, cruel and mean, and he's looking down on the soldiers that he was handed into their care, and their care was anything but careful. It was mean, and it was awful, and it was brutal. And so Jesus, while hanging on the cross, looking down at the religious leaders, his people who betrayed him, and the ones he was betrayed to who was torturing him and killed him, to those people, Jesus says, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Father, forgive them. They don't know. You know, if Jesus was a Hollywood filmmaker, that's not what he would have said. If Jesus was really knowing how to make movies, right, it would have been like this. He's on the cross, and all of a sudden, come on, angels, let's get them. Because the people who were cruel to Jesus deserved what they should have got. But fortunately, Jesus wasn't into making good movies. He was into bringing grace to lost people. Now, have you ever thought of the people who were cruel to Jesus as being lost? I mean, really, have you ever thought of the cruel soldiers and the mean and ornery backstabbing religious leaders? Have you ever thought of them as lost? Yeah, well, good, Stephanie, because that's right. You see, well, even before I go on, how many of you know cruel people in your life? How many of you have been hurt by people in your life? How many of you can relate to Jesus who've had people kind of stab you in the back and treat you poorly and do miserable things to you? You know what it is at times to be treated the way Jesus was treated. And so Jesus offers grace to these people, and I think we get a hint at the why. He says, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. Now, I have a confession to make. Is this a safe environment for me? Is this safe? Okay, I trust you too. On Friday afternoon, I saw it. Oh, I agree, Erica. You're judging me, but stop. See, you know, my boys wanted to go see it. I'm like, I don't know, guys. And so I just want to go check it out. And so I'm going to give a spoiler alert. Here it comes. If you need to not be spoiled, go pee or something right now. And but here's the deal. I after the movie, you know, I told, you know, my son's like, oh, God. My friend Will wanted to know. And I texted him, this is a horrible movie. I didn't like it. Don't go. I told my sons yesterday, you know, don't go. It wasn't a good movie. And you know what my boys did last night? They went and saw it, of course. But I didn't like it. It's just not my thing. I'm not into the scary thing. And I got some gift card money, you know, for my birthday back in May to the theaters. And I'm sitting there watching this stupid movie thinking, man, this is gift card money down the tubes. But as the movie unfolded, and it's not my genre, I don't like the horror thing, I had my God goggles on. Remember God goggles from Real to Real? I began to see something that was helpful to today's teaching. Spoiler alert, here it comes. Gotta go pee. There's a guy in the movie who's rocking the mullet. That's the best thing about him. He was a high school kid, about 15 years old, and he was just an idiot. He was a jerk. And he was unbelievably mean and cruel to kind of the focal group of the movie. The focal group was called the Losers Club, you know, self-named. And these guys were getting picked on by this dude. And this guy was just evil. They had several scenes where he's just being unbelievably mean to the Losers Club, but there was one point in the theater, and it's me and about like 20 middle-aged men watching this movie on a Friday afternoon. There's a one point where one of these young men, the guys who are kind of on the outside, are getting just beat up by this loser, idiot, jerk, and his buddies, and they're by the riverbed, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a big rock comes and hits the guy in the head. And you look up on the bank, and you see this group of misfits. They've had enough. Now, here's God goggles for you. This isn't what I'm talking about, but it was pretty sweet. They realized when they stood together, they could stand against any evil. It was phenomenal. That's not the point, but that was a free one. Do you like that one? So they're throwing rocks at this kid, and he's getting pelted, and there's a little rock war, and you know, and his buddies run away, so they're the jerks there by himself trying to fight off seven of the other people, and he's just getting pelted with rocks. He gets knocked down, and he's laying on the gravel just bleeding, and I'm not kidding you. I'm not making the guy behind me sitting right here just is, finish him! No, it was a scary movie. I didn't jump much at all. But when that guy behind me, who had been quiet the whole movie, yelled at the top of his lungs, finish him, I jumped. It was the scariest part of the whole movie. And then for a minute, I felt like I was in church because the two gentlemen to my right, they're over there. They look back at this guy and they're like, mm-hmm, finish him. Now, if Jesus was like us, he wouldn't have said, Father, forgive them. He would have said, Father, finish them. You see, Jesus approaches the jerks of life differently than we do. And this is the part where I thought the story was actually really helpful. So this guy was a jerk. He was an idiot. He was just mean. But as the movie unfolded, you saw his interaction, this 15-year-old jerk's interactions with his father in the story. I'm going to give you two options. Option A, do you think, A, he and his dad were chummy and buddies and his dad was tender and kind-hearted? Or option B, do you think his dad was cruel and mean and abusive to him? Yeah. So what's going on in the story? I don't recommend you see it. If you do, whatever. There's a guy who's miserable and the people didn't know that there's more to his story that's leading to his stupidity. The theology of it, who knew? So when Jesus looks down on the jerks of life, the cruelest of the cruel, he sees beyond their stupidity, he sees beyond their cruelty, and he gives us something that we can do when we see the jerks at work. How many have a jerk at work? How many of you have an idiot in your neighborhood? How many of you have you fill in the blank at school? Somebody that just can't stand them because they're cruel. Cruel at school. You know what Jesus does to those people? He doesn't scream, finish them. Listen to this. This is important for you to listen to. He prays for them. And he says, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. So if you've got jerks at work, people who are cruel at school, and idiot neighbors. I know that doesn't rhyme, but idiot neighbor, what are you going to do? Don't be like all the fellas at the movie. Finish them. Pray for them because they don't know what they're doing. Pray for them. Jesus sees the lost people who are lost in their own baggage, who are doing mean things, and he reaches out with a prayer of compassion and kindness. Will you? Well, there's another thing Jesus says. He addresses another type of person on the cross. Hold up on that verse yet. So what's going on in the next place? We're jumping over to John chapter 19. Jesus is on the cross, and what's on either side of Jesus? Anybody know? Thieves. Stupid people who made dumb choices. Stewing in their own juice, sleeping in their own bed, dumb people. How many of you know people who've made dumb choices in their life? Goodness gracious. And one of those people who've made a dumb choice in his life I'm confused because this is actually point three. Be ready. We're jumping to the third scripture. One of those people made dumb choices in his life. Looked at Jesus and said, Jesus, you think you're all bad. Save yourself and us. But the other guy, stuck in his own junk. Stuck in his own junk. Turned to Jesus. Now, pay attention. He turned to Jesus. Don't put that verse up yet. We'll look into the third verse, but not yet. Hold on. Do you know when we started the river 13 years ago, we kind of got in trouble by the denomination that helped start us? In a few ways. When we started the denomination, or this church, we're part of a tribe called the Reformed Church in America, and they were wonderful in giving us grants and helping the river start 13 years ago. We decided to do baptisms the way that the Ethiopian eunuch and Philip did in the book of Acts, right? This guy had a Jesus encounter, right? And a disciple guy was there, and he said, let's go get baptized. And we decided, we're going to do it. And we started baptizing, you know, new believers this way. And the denomination sent some people to rebuke and correct us. They sent the church pastor relations committee to kind of bring correction to the river. And they said, hey, when you baptized people, you don't do it that way. Now, these are good people, well-intended. They didn't mean anything wrong. I'm not speaking of their character, I'm speaking of their confusion. They said, when you baptize people, you don't just baptize people spontaneously. You need to pull them aside, have a 6 to 8 week class where they meet maybe Wednesday or Tuesday night, and they get explained some things, and they get some taught some things. And then at the end of it, you got to give them a little quiz, a little test to make sure that they get it. And if they pass the quiz and they get it, then you can baptize people. And while we're talking about the sacraments, they said, the way you guys do communion, you just don't do it that way. You've been around, we do communion. I say, you know, this is symbolic of the body and the blood, and it's a new covenant, it's about grace, it's for you. Jesus gave it to Judas so you, knucklehead, could come up here too, right? I mean, that's basically all we do. But they said, you don't do it that way. And they pulled out our order of worship and the liturgy, and it was 13 pages long. Now, I don't need a ton of sleep. I stay up really late at night. I don't, you know, I'm fine. I don't sleep a lot, but man, everything I've read that I would fall asleep. It made an insomniac fall asleep. 13 pages of thous and these and thises and thats and a congregation, stand now, sit here, stand over here, sit there, repeat after me, read that long, boring thing. 13 pages of it. And you don't do any of that when you do communion at the church, and you probably ought to. That's not the way you should do it. You see, good-hearted, this is key, good-hearted, well-intended Christians have routinely put hurdles between people who need the grace of Jesus and Jesus himself. And so it's easy. Yeah, clap for that. Yeah! How dare those people at the denomination do that, huh? Everybody repeat after me. Now let's just be clear, we do too. Of course we're going to celebrate when we baptize the way we do. Of course we're going to celebrate the teaching of we're going to do communion this way. But I'll tell you what, I'm wondering if anybody in this room unknowingly puts hurdles between people who need grace and Jesus. I wonder if you do just like they did. So there's two dudes on the cross. One is ripping on Jesus. Another guy stuck in his shame. We're not ready for the verse yet, but it's coming. Stuck in his shame. You see, whenever we make dumb choices, and let's be honest, we make dumb choices. Has anybody not made a dumb choice in the past 6 days? You know, when we make sinful decisions, when we do things that we don't want to do, shame, it rises. And you know what shame does? I'm not kidding, it causes early baldness. I read that this week. Maybe that was my problem. According to studies, shame leads to higher rates of self-loathing, repeated patterns of destructive behavior, blaming and arguing, which inhibits growth, eating disorders, addictions. Shame is deadly. And when followers of Christ unintentionally, unknowingly, wanting to train people, which is a good thing, put barriers up between the grace of Jesus and the people who need it, it heaps shame. So we got two dudes, one on each side, and this one over here, he knows he's messed up. And you know, we know we messed up. We don't need people to tell us we've messed up, right? Every one of us has a standard that we hope to live up to, and every one of us hasn't even met our own standard, right? So there's that guy hanging on the cross. And he simply turns to Jesus. He just turns to Jesus. And he says, Jesus, remember me when you come into my kingdom. And now the third verse, here it is. This is what Jesus says to him. Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. And if you've ever been a knucklehead, if you've ever not met your own standard, if you ever have been struck by the reality of your own sinfulness, you ought to repeat after me and go, so go ahead, turn to your neighbor and go, that's kind of creepy, I know. But Jesus didn't turn to the guy who turned to him and say, hey man, you gotta do this 13-page liturgy. You gotta take a 6-week class. He didn't turn to the guy and said, do you go to church on Sundays? And do you stand when worship is going on? He didn't say, do you tithe at the joy boxes? He didn't say, are you part of a small group? He didn't say, do you have a Bible study? He simply turned to the dude who needed grace. And all that dude was just look to Jesus. Somebody say, look to Jesus. He just turned to the guy who looked to Jesus. And he said, today you'll be with me in paradise. Repeat after me. That's good. And so I'm wondering if you are like that guy on the cross. The one to the right of Jesus. You know, here at the River, we use the language in our faith journey, you know, we're once a seed, we become roots, then we grow into trees. I wonder if somebody today needs to become a root. Nope. Well, yes, but I meant a seed. Somebody today might become a seed in the faith. Today's the day maybe some of you for the first time, like that dude on the cross, just turn to Jesus. Maybe today's the first day you just turn to Jesus and say, Jesus, remember me. Turn to him. Jesus. Okay, backing up my notes, I skipped point two. Let's make point two, point three, and you guys will never know, right? Doing great work over there on the slides. So Jesus on the cross. He looks at his mom. Her name is what? What's her name again? Yeah, and then that disciple the Bible describes as the one Jesus loved. What was his name? Now, Jesus loved all the disciples, but you know, he is kind of especially connected to that one guy, John. And they're broken. Their connection, their son, their buddy, their mentor was gone. He's about ready to be gone. And Jesus sees their lostness, the lostness of relational disconnectedness. And he does not say, you know, why don't you hire a professional, see a therapist? Just be nice to each other like a paid caregiver. Jesus instead uses specific types of language when he looks. Here it is from John chapter 19. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to her, woman, here is your son. And to the disciple, here's your mother. And from that time on, the disciple took her into his home. He used language of family, people who were lost relationally. He didn't just say, be acquaintances. He gave them family. Jesus sees those who are in a broken state relationally. People who are lost in the conundrum of I ain't got nobody. And he connects them in a family. One of the top reasons people give for leaving a church across the country is a lack of connectedness, feeling on the outside, maybe feeling like Mary and John felt before Jesus said, hey, you were in a family. See, Jesus didn't create a church movement for us to just be disconnected. He created the church in part to be family. Family. You know, Brigham Young study, 2015, I'm not making this up either, that disconnected non-family thing can also cause early onset baldness. All these things cause baldness. I was messed up from the get-go. But more insidiously, that disconnected no family thing, according to this study, is as deadly as morbid obesity, substance abuse, and violence. This disconnectedness, no family feel, can drastically inhibit memory and lead to poor educational performance. And Jesus sees people who are lost from a family perspective and says, I give you family. Now, I think maybe because Christy's folks modeled this well and my mom modeled it very well, Christy and I have kind of always embraced this thing, often her being the leader in it. I'm thinking of 1993 when we're at seminary up at Western Theological Seminary in Holland. We had a nice little community thing going. Me and Christy, my best friend Mike, the three of us got along great. We had our circle. Our circle was safe, comfortable and closed. And then we met Roy Deki Tamuil from Indonesia. I was in my young 20s at the time. He was in his young 30s at the time. I was 6'5 at the time. He was 4'5 at the time. I didn't need any more friends, so I thought. And I see this lonely guy living next door, not knowing anybody in America, barely speaking the language, and I had everything I needed. But then I remembered what my mom always did. My house, when I was growing up, it was kind of the, you remember in like the Rudolph movie, The Island of the Misfit Toys? Kids would just come to our house early morning before school so that my mom could, you know, give them something to eat and pray for them. Everybody just loved going around there. And Christy's family was the same thing. Man, you got stories and pictures in her photo albums when she was a little girl. Her family always had people in the house. And so we said, you know what? We probably ought to reach out to Roy, even though I didn't need a friend. And I already had my circle, and it was comfy in the circle. So we took our circle, and we opened it up. And Roy came in. And we gave Roy what Jesus gave Mary and John, a family. He was lost relationally. He wasn't lost anymore. And you know what we got in return? The ability to once in a while brag at how charitable we are. Would you all just clap for how charitable I am? Thank you, thank you. That's what we got, right? Is that what we got? Do you know what I got? Friend who blessed my life. You see, whenever we live out that interaction with those who are lost relationally and do what Jesus did with Mary and John, we get the benefits. It was now 1996. You know, I was working at Third Reformed Church, and there was a single mother who had this eighth grade freshman son who had nowhere to leave him when she traveled on work. So she showed up at our house one day and said, I need you to watch our son, my son, while I'm gone. Okay, how long can you be gone? I don't know, maybe a month. So Christy and I had been married for a couple years at this time, and this young fella comes in our life, and next thing you know, we have a little brother living with us. That was many years ago. We're still in relationship with this guy, and our life is better because he's in it. I don't know about his life, but I know my life is better because we opened the circle and said, come on in. And then my kids have followed the track. I mean, we got a buddy, he might be sitting with our family right now over there, who about 4 years ago kind of hung out with one of my kids, and he just became a part of our family, and he's a part of our family and has been for 4 years, and my life is better because of him. So when Jesus sees people lost in relational, just abyss, lonely, alone, he says, this is your family. Because he cares about such things. Now, I want to do something a little, this is kind of risky, it's a little bold, it's going to ask some of you to be really vulnerable. It's a safe place. You have a pulse, what? There's nobody in here who doesn't have issues from time to time, but do you feel just lost relationally as if you have no family? If that's you, would you stand up so we could just see who this really hits in a different kind of way? Anybody? Everybody look around. Man, that's bold for you to stand. I'm going to let you sit down in a second. I mean, do y'all see this? Look around. Okay, thank you for that. Now here's the deal. When Jesus models for us connecting people in families, he's not just doing something for us to applaud his charitability. Look at that guy. Way to go, Jesus. He's modeling the action that you and I need to make on our own. You saw people stand right here, and some of you got your little circle. It's pretty comfortable. It's pretty safe. Then you're thinking to yourself, I don't need another friend, but I'm telling you, you do, and there are people in this room who are dying for your friendship to be a part of your family. Will you do something with the teaching of God today? Will you do something with the modeling of Jesus? Because when Jesus sees lost people stand up and says, hey, I don't really have a family, he doesn't say, well, we'll pray for you. He prays for the jerks, remember? He prays for the jerks of the world. But for those who are alone and need a family, he actually does the work of connecting people. And I'm wondering if there's anybody in this room who's going to connect people today in a family. being lost is not good. It's a fun TV show to watch, but it's not being lost. And you know lost people who in their brokenness in the past are just jerks. Pray for them. And then you know people who are lost in their own sin, and you've been there, and maybe you are there right now. Just bring them to the grace of Jesus. No strings attached, no hurdles, just point to the grace of Jesus. And there are people who are lost without a family. I'm telling you, be the family that somebody needs. Lost. Least. Lonely. 2 more weeks.
Thanks for listening. For more information, check us out online at theriver.info.